Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Support Music Coalition call presented by the NAMM Foundation. My name is Mary Lurson. I'm Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, and it's just delightful to hear you and have you all here with us today. As I was driving to the airport yesterday, I was listening to the traffic weather and the AM station that every morning broadcasts the opening of the New York Stock Exchange. And I found that they do something very similar to what we do. They ring a bell. We don't have a bell, but they give a huge cheer. So let's give a huge cheer to the start of our coalition meeting to say hello. And this is a way of saying hello, that we're here, to everyone that's joining us via the webcast from around the country today. So thank you so much for being with us. As you know, the Support Music Coalition, brought to you by the NAMM Foundation, unites the country and really anyone around the world that is interested in supporting music education, is working to keep music education strong and to be an advocate for music education. It's a very unique and highly focused role that we have to support music teachers and to support music teachers in training and anyone that cares as much as we do about the importance of music education in the life of every child and indeed every person. So we have a wonderful musical guest today that's been very strongly influenced by music teacher and music education. So let's kick off with some music by Black Violin. One half is here in the room, the other half participates with us via track, but is also with us on the line. So I introduce Kev Marcus, who will kick us off with some music.
Thank you. I'm here supporting Black Violin. I'm one half of Black Violin. The other half is actually having a baby tonight, so he couldn't be here. What a sorry excuse, you know, but he couldn't make it. So I'll try to hold the fort on my own, and we'll start off with some music just so you can catch a vibe of what we do. What we do, I like to term it as classical boom. So this one is called Dirty Orchestra. Thank you.
Wow, that's totally awesome, right? That's what we say. I'd also like to just have Larry Kosen, who's in the audience. Larry, can you give us a wave? He's their wonderful manager and understands the connection to music education. So Larry, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. So, my friend Kev, and Will, Will is with us on the line, so this yes. goes, and that was played to track, right?
That was played to track, yes.
So we heard Will in there somewhere.
Yes, right? He's in there somewhere in the back in that track, yes.
Great. So let's get this over with right away. We have to get kind of the A-list. Who have you played with?
Okay, we got our start with Alicia Keys in 2004, and we were in her band for, you know, for probably a whole season, and we did like American Music Awards, and we did AMAs, we did Billboard Awards, and did a bunch of award shows with her, and she taught us how to be gracious and how to be humble, and then she passed us on to Kanye West, and we played with Kanye West on the graduation tour. We've also played with Linkin Park. We did 2 years with them all over the world. We've opened up from everyone from 50 Cent in Bangkok to Aerosmith, to Stevie Nicks, to Ben Folds, to, you know, everyone. And we've been able to travel all over the world with all these artists, and we were in their band for the most part, but we always felt like we had something more, something special that we wanted to bring. And the fact of us being in the forefront as Black Violin was very interesting to us. I mean, we could play in everyone's band, but we felt like, you know, us and our presence, the way that we play the violin, how we approach it, is important for everyone to see, for kids to see, for, you know, music education as well. And that's why we went back to just Black Violin and focusing on us as front men. But, you know, we love performing for all of them and playing.
And now you've got an album. We can still call it an album. It's called Stereotypes.
Yes, right? We do have an album that we just released on Universal Music Classics. It is called Stereotypes. And, you know, we named it that because, you know, we wanted to make sure that our message met our music, you know? Our message is that you can wear fitted caps and jeans with holes in it and still be cool, but still play the violin at a very high level and still get a scholarship to college and just make it yours. So, you know, because of that, we called our album Stereotypes, and been doing very well.
You know, I think, you know, my question about who you played with, I think is, it's important to know that A-list group has, you know, embraced you and brought and pulled you along into their musical entrepreneurship, because those are really strong, powerful people in the business.
Definitely.
And they, you know, no doubt were really stunned by, not stunned, but embraced your quality.
Yes, definitely.
Because as a musician, it is about quality, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely that. And it's also about approach. You know, I think they embraced us because we studied classical. Will and I'll give a little backstory. Will and I, we met in high school, first day of orchestra class. I was a sophomore. He was a freshman. We were stand partners. I was first chair. He was second chair. He'll deny it, but that's the truth.
It's not true.
You see, he's coming in denying it right now.
We have to let Will respond too.
Is that not true, Will? I was first chair. You were second chair, right?
That's not how I remember it. I don't think so, right, James Miles?
I've got to cut in here, Kevin. You're leaving out the fact that we had a rotating seating.
Well,
that's
my high school teacher on the phone, Mr. Miles, too.
Oh, that's James Miles. We have a high school teacher. We were saving him for a big moment, but, you know, a good music educator just has to jump in there. So, so we have on the line Will B, and also this is James Miles, who was their orchestra teacher in their school in Florida. And we need a shout out to this teacher. This is our bigger shout out.
Make some noise for Mr. James Miles.
James
on the line.
Miles,
yes.
Music teacher.
I still call him Mr. Miles after all of these years. I can't call him James. He's still Mr. Miles. It's just like second period in high school. You know, those days were what shaped us. So it's just good to have him on the line.
So you and Will B met in orchestra class.
We met in orchestra class. Orchestra class, second period. That's where we met. And every day, you know, Mr. Miles was very vigilant on making sure that we practiced and we played the entire hour. We would never play around in his class. And he pushed all of us to be better than we ever thought we could be. And to realize dreams we didn't even know existed. And that's how we met. You know, it was always classical 100%. We grew up hip hop, so I would listen to, you know, play classical music in second period, but I'll be listening to hip hop on the way to third period. You know what I mean? So it's just, we lived hip hop and we studied classical, and that's how we kind of put it all together.
So James Miles, the music teacher, what was it like to have these two young gentlemen in your class? Did you see potential in them from day one?
Sure. I met Wellner when he was a sixth grader at Sunrise Middle School 2 years previous to that. And he was ending the school year and wanted to sign up for a music class over the summer. And the band director there didn't have space to fit him in, so he put him in with me for a string camp. For that summer, that's when I started him on viola. And he had planned to bring Wellner back in the fall and make him a trumpet player. And one of the funny stories that I shared with Wellner, I think right before he got married, was that the band director wanted to keep Wellner as a trumpet player, and I wanted to keep him as a viola player, so we had a deal. We'd go out and play a round of golf, and whoever won got to keep Wellner. But he was a very proud band director and thought he was a really good golfer, but I didn't want to tell him I was a scratch golfer, so I took him at the first 9 holes. So it really wasn't very fair, because I knew I was going to get Wellner. But, yeah, they're both incredibly talented, and they were very polite young men and very well-mannered. And it was not in the best of conditions that their school was at, and they rose above everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that. So, Will and Kev, then what was this high school relationship like between the two of you? You were standmates, mm-hmm. You know, you said you had orchestra second period the rest of your life, third through eighth period.
Yeah.
I mean, did you just get bonded through this experience? Does it give you a kind of a leveling, fair place to know each other?
There were like 30 of us, you know, and we were all like, we were the top orchestra we went to a performing arts high school in Fort Lauderdale. It's called Dillard Center of the Arts. And you know, it was just kind of, the classical was always just the breeding ground for us. We all played it. Mr. Miles didn't really, he didn't push other types of art forms. It was all about classical. We play it like this. You stand up straight. You approach it very classical. We were always really cool. All of us in the orchestra were always really tight. But I think that it's really because of the influences we had outside of it, you know, perfectly matched with the training that we got, which is what allowed most of us to get full scholarships to college.
Both
of us did. I studied at Florida International University with the Miami String Quartet, Chauncey Patterson, and I was a violist at the time. And then Will went to Florida State University. Don't say yes for that. We're friends despite that, but it went well for us, though. It ended up coming out well for us, for sure.
How about you, Will, in terms of the journey as a high school student? What did this orchestra experience mean to you?
It really meant everything. Just being able to stay focused. I mean, I remember just being in orchestra class and always rehearsing, always had something to do. And not only just in high school, but, you know, like Kevin and I, we were part of so many different orchestras outside of high school, from, you know, YACO to, you know, youth orchestras. So it always kept us, for me particularly, kept me busy, kept me focused. So I didn't have time to hang around with, you know, friends I probably should not have hung around with. So, you know, it was everything. Kept us focused, kept us in a path, in a direction, and that you see here today, you know.
You know, when thank you, Will. When someone says this about their childhood, it's not childhood, their teenage years, that it meant everything to me. I mean, why wouldn't we just go to the ends of the earth to make sure it's available to every child? I mean, that's the bottom line, you know. And that's what, you know, I mean, that's what we're about. You know, this effort through NAM and our friends at the Music Education Association, so many NAM members here, you know, this is the core belief that we have, because it means everything. And it can change a life.
Yeah, it definitely can. I mean, and you know, we grew up in a really tough neighborhood, and for the most part, the only way to really get out of it was sports, you know. And I remember, even, you know, being, I'm a big black dude, looked like a linebacker. I remember being, you you know, recruited by the football team. But I was like, nah, I think I'll just stick to the violin. And my uncles are like, ah, what are you doing? You would be great. You know, violin, what is that? And then I remember taking them to the Alicia Keys concert a few years later. And they're like, ah, that music class was great. I'm sorry I ever said anything about it.
And just think, you don't have to worry about that concussion stuff.
My head's right? Good. I
just
still have
a few
both
calluses, little calluses, right?
Yep,
stuff like that.
Yep.
Right?
I chose the easier profession.
I think we
profession.
Got a lot of cases for that. Well, that's really great. So we have to, you know, we worry a lot about kids that start and don't stay with it.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, was there ever that, were you just swept along so strongly, this is to Will too, that you never thought, I'm going, well, your uncle wanted you to quit and do football.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, did you ever feel that you just, this is, it's not part of who I think I should be in terms of this?
I'll take it first, Will. I mean, like, there's moments. We played 161 shows this year.
So
this
you wanted to quit now?
No.
After you've made it, you wanted to quit?
There's moments when we're performing, and I'll look over to my left, and with the violin, I don't even think about it anymore. I've been playing it for 25 years. It's like walking. I barely think about it. But I remember looking down a couple of times this year, and I'm just like, I can't believe I'm still playing this instrument. Like, you know, this thing my mom made me do when I was in the fifth grade. I was a cute girl in middle school that made me do it in middle school. And then high school.
Mother made you do it.
My mother made me do it
Your
in fifth grade.
Made
my mother made me do it. And then in high school, Mr. Miles was such a great motivator, and he let us see that it's sort of a weapon almost. That's how I like to think of it. Once I realized that the violin could change perceptions, then there was never a reason to quit. And I remember it was just pretty clearly this, I digress a little, but I met this girl in high school and I'm
naturally
back to a girl, of course. I went and met her parents, and our parents were like, you know, I'm 16, and like, hey, so what are you doing? I was like, yeah, I have a full scholarship in violin to FIU. Really? And people's perception just changed naturally. It's like I might as well said I was a rocket scientist or something that seems so far out of reach. And then for me, being a black guy growing up the way I did, I looked at it as a weapon. I looked at it as an instrument of change. I looked at it as I could change people's entire perception, because most people, if you've never met me, you would, you know, last thing you think I'd do is play violin. And I love it, and I feed on it. It's like, it's why I do this. You know, so when to go back to your question, you know, once I figured that out, I just never really wanted to quit. There was never a reason to quit. You know, after I got to college, got a full scholarship. Right after college, we sent off a tape to Showtime at the Apollo, which is, if you don't know it, it's the longest running talent competition in the world. Michael Jackson was there. James Brown was on that show in Harlem. And when we won that, Alicia Keys took us immediately, and then Kanye, and then it just kept becoming a snowball. So I never had an off ramp. There was never a moment where I thought about it.
But the validation came to you over, by sticking to it, you got more and more validation.
Yeah, doors just kept opening over and over and over. And, you know, because we worked hard at it. I mean, I won't say that we didn't. We definitely worked really hard at it throughout high school and then throughout college to graduate with that degree, playing juries and, you know, recitals and everything. So we worked really hard at it. But, you know, it was always the innate stuff. It was always the hip hop, the, you know, hip hop meets classical that we can do effortlessly because we lived in both of those worlds. And we figured it out pretty early on.
Yeah.
And once we figured that out, we knew we could change perceptions, and then it became bigger than music, you know?
Yeah, and you were in an incubator too. We kind of were protected by your teacher, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So Will, how about you? Was there a moment?
No, I can't think of a moment that I've ever thought about quitting. You know, and I think the reason I would think is because, you know, we always did different things with it. I can remember being in high school, and there's this little hallway before you get into the actual rehearsal room, this little room, and it was very echoey, right? I used to just go in there and just literally just play and just play scales and just kind of just play whatever I felt, you know? And I used to go in the bathroom, which is probably a bad place to go and practice, but I used to go to the bathroom, just practice and play, just play whatever. You know, just because it just sounded good. But I think, you know, I think initially we always, I don't know, for some reason we always wanted to do something different with it. And we did it, you know, and I think that's one of the main reasons why we kept going. Never had a reason to quit, you know what I mean? And it obviously just evolved over the years. But, You know, it's just, and if you think of hip hop and an essence of hip hop, it's all about being creative. It's all about, you know, being who you are and expressing yourself, right? And we were completely immersed in the hip hop culture. So for us, it was just completely natural for us to look at the violin, the viola, you know, classical music in that way. It was just very natural for us to really, you know, look at it that way and really expand on that, you know? So I think that's really the reason why we never thought about quitting, you know? And I think a lot of kids nowadays, they need that. They need to be able to see the violin in a way that is just like, oh, this violin is mine. I could make this do whatever I want it to do. And obviously you got to keep the fundamentals and the skills are necessary, but if they can honestly find that thing that really makes them unique within that instrument, like they'll never quit. They'll never think about quitting, you know?
I think you've both shared a very important message to us who care about music education, is we need to keep pushing ourselves to be relevant, you know, to the people that we want most to have this experience. And that, you know, that informs our instruction, that informs the way we set curriculums. I'm looking at Marcia Neal, you know, who's so capable and good at sharing these ideas. We've got the mariachi team in the room. You know, we have to look at our school curriculums that make sure that quality is always the standard, but that variety and diversity and self-expression, we've heard that a lot now, self-expression.
Yeah. And then, you know, another thing to add, I mean, we speak to so many kids. We play for 150,000 kids across North America every year. And when we speak to them, what we always say is, you know, they say, well, how do you keep doing this? Why haven't you quit? And it's because it's been mine for years. And when you're a kid playing it, most of the time at the beginning, it's your mom's, and then maybe it's your teacher's. But then if you don't ever make it yours, you're probably going to quit, you know? And it's like, I think that, as educators, what I would, you know, challenge you guys is to try to find ways to make it Kev, make it Mary. No, not just Bach or Beethoven's. Make it that individual kids, however that, you know, you do it. And specifically to violin, you know, I mean, compared to other instruments, when you're a violinist, you go in and first day they say, here's Suzuki Book One or however, you know, whatever method they're using. And you play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star for 6 months, you know, and that's how it starts. Guitar, you walk in and they're like, what's your favorite song? And then they teach you that. So immediately it's that kid's instrument. So it just seems that it's easier for that kid to be able to stick with it compared to a violin. But nowadays, there's so many cool videos on YouTube. I mean, there's Lindsey Stirling's, there's Black Violins. There's all kind of people to show you other ways of taking that instrument. You know, you can't skip the scales and arpeggios, but you can take it and make it yours after orchestra period is over, and it will help you play it for longer, I think. And I think that's something we should all focus on, is just trying to like make a personal relationship with each kid and that instrument.
So this is to James Miles, our orchestra teacher. So you obviously, you know, were teaching in what was sort of a challenging circumstances. So how did you pull these kids along? What was part of your strategy or your approach?
Well, Dillard School of the Arts is an inner city school, and it's a predominantly black school, and we were a magnet wing that were supposedly drawing students from all over the county. Of course, that wasn't the case for the most part. But we were able to take advantage of the fact that Florida has a really broad curriculum, so that we had techniques classes and string quartet classes. And the one thing I will say is that Kevin and Wilner both played in string quartets almost all the way through their high school years, in addition to being in orchestra. And we had techniques classes that really helped as far as getting them advanced enough so that they could move on into other things like playing in community orchestras. We had a community college, Broward Community College, which had a very generous program that if you played in their community orchestra, you could get private lessons with Florida Philharmonic players. And so once you got to a level, that really made a huge difference as far as them being able to get private instruction on top of the techniques classes that we'd work on in class. If I could add a point that Kevin was on there, I think the most important thing about music isn't necessarily the type of music or the genre as much as the idea that music is about expression. And to be expressive in music is more about the discipline of getting your technique to the level that you can become expressive. And I think both of them reached that level quickly in their high school career. And that was one of the reasons they felt so much success, is that, you know, they made it to the All-State Orchestras. they got to play in these special groups. There were some special youth orchestras. There was a conductor, Wendell Simmons, who ran a specific chamber orchestra in the county. And I know Kevin was in it. I think Wilner was, too, eventually. But they both got to play in these special orchestras that were, you know, at a much higher level than what would happen in a normal high school class. And it was just such a wonderful experience. I remember all the performances they were in, and perhaps I don't remember. I think Kevin's senior year, they had 51 high school performances, and that did not include string quartets or other chamber music things that they played in. So they played a lot when they were in school. The funniest quartet gig I remember Kevin was at was when they went down and played for the cast of the Striptease movie when that was being made in Miami. And it was a nighttime gig for us, but it was their lunch. And Kevin and his little string quartet went in there and played for them, and their entire cast, Demi Moore, everyone that was there was just absolutely amazed with their quartet and the fact that they were able to play classical music. That was just amazing to them.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's true.
You know, and to get really wonky for a minute, the new national standards allow for all this breadth of opportunity and diversity, and that's, you know, we'll talk well a little bit later about our new opportunity ahead with our new federal education law, but, you know, we are at a very interesting time where there's not really much holding us back to create this diversity of opportunity, this connection to community, this layers and layers of breadth and depth. So we want you to do a little demo for us to talk about the technique of all this. Would you help us?
Sure.
In terms of how this all works, which is awesomely cool.
Well, for me, I always look at it as I try to make it where the violin is, you're like, what is he doing with that? You know, I want it to be a challenge. So I keep it, you know, pretty much classical for the most part, and I try to be very classical with it because I find that the more classical you are with it when you have lush strings, but a hard beat is really what gets the most people. It's the most unifying sound. So, you know, I'll use my Yamaha violin. Shout out to Yamaha in the house. These are my sponsors. I was just telling the story how they sent me this violin before we went to perform for the troops in Iraq the first time in 2010. I've been playing it ever since. I love this instrument. So, and one of the things about this instrument particularly, I mean, I have a degree in classical music. You know, I love my acoustic violin, you know, but this electric, it gives me a wider vocabulary, so to speak. So I'll show you kind of some of the things I can do, and I might just play a little something extra for you guys. So, you know, I'm using my Yamaha violin, but I have a boss pedal down here, and I run through all bass stuff. That's my trick. I don't like guitar stuff. I like bass stuff. I'm also a violist at heart, so it's sort of part of me. So, you know, right now it's just normal violin stuff. You know, that's cool, but I want to be able to do more. So, like, you know, I have it tricked out so I can do... Or if I want to cheat a little bit and make it sound like I have a full orchestra on stage, I have this octaver. Yeah, it is cheating. It's so cheating, but it's great. And then also I'm a producer, so I like to just kind of record things. And, you know, I do a lot of plucking. I want you to be like, what does he do? How did he create? I just love that. So, you know, I'll do something like. Thank you. So it just kind of lets me do whatever. So like with the Yamaha, with the Boss pedal, I did some wah, I played a bass note, I played rhythm, I could play lead, I could play orchestra, I can do so many different things. I was just kind of making it up. It's on the Justin Bieber song, right? So yeah, my kids love that song. It's in my head, so I had to do it. But because of that, I feel like I didn't have this kind of thing in high school. Mr. Miles didn't teach us how to use the wah pedal, but with the scales and the arpeggios, I feel like, you know, like he said, he gave us enough technique for us to know how to express ourselves with it. And then this just allows for more vocabulary, allows me to do what I want. I play a Justin Bieber song because that's what I like, and then I solo on it and make it mine. And that's kind of what we talk to kids about, is just making it theirs. You know, however you find it, you can't skip scales and arpeggios, but you can make it yours, and you can do something and that's, you know, uniquely yours. And it'll make them stick with it more. It'll make them believe in themselves more. It'll make them practice more to do things that they can't do. And that's what it's done for me. So, you know, just a little, you know, shout out again to Yamaha. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. So both you and Will, tell us about this new project, Stereotypes. Is this album out, or is it about to come out?
Well, it's out now. It's been out since September 18th.
Okay.
And, you know, it's on Universal Classic. It's our first debut, major debut, but we have two previous albums independently. And this album is very unique in terms of just the process. It was just a very different process than the previous albums, but it's still great, though. I think this album definitely, you know, identifies, you know, our not only our sound, but our mission statement, you know, and, you know, not only Stereotypes, but just being able to be yourself and be who you are as a musician, as a person. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, as long as you can truly, you know, create and express yourself in the way that you want to, you know. And this album, the process was very much like that. You know, we recorded most of the album in New York, in Brooklyn, and it was just incredible. And at the same time touring, because we had like 160 shows this year, so we started recording this album probably the end of January until April. So we're touring and recording albums. So this year has been incredible. A lot of work, a lot of hard work. But the process was definitely amazing. Great, you know, a lot of amazing musicians and features on the album. And yeah, it's out now. Go get it, iTunes or Barnes & Noble.
Shameless plug.
So why did you choose you said it's a mission of the album. Tell us more about the where you are with this.
Well, you know, as when we travel, we get to travel all over the place. And when I'm in an airport, for instance, most of the time I get on the plane, or if I'm just in the airport, you know, someone will say, "Hey, what you got in there? Saxophone?" Will is, but he's so bad with, he'll like, no, keep guessing. Like, he'll have them guess, and they'll never guess viola for him. Like, they'll never get it. But it's something about that for us, you know, particularly, I mean, you know, again, you know, we don't look like violinists, and we we love to just play with that. We play with that entire thing. So for us to name the album Stereotypes and make that our mission is just, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. You can do anything that you put your mind to. And that's kind of the purpose of it. And especially right now, there's so many other things going on socially, whether it's, you know, Ferguson or Mike Brown or anything else that's going on in the news, and profiling and stereotyping seems to be at the forefront of it. So we're in a unique position where we do something that you don't see very often. So rather than just make it subliminal, we wanted it to be very much in the forefront, and it has worked. And, you know, it's given us a really good social platform. It's when you come to a black violin show, you're going to see white, black, purple, green, 50-year-olds, 70-year-olds, 5-year-olds. Everyone's going to be out their seats dancing the entire time. It's a very uniting kind of music. And we felt like we could make our album, we could title our album and make the message of our album speak to us and equally make great music at the same time. So, you know, you don't often get that chance. And since we did, we decided to take it. And Universal's been great with supporting it and pushing it, and gotten some great press because of it, and able to spread our brand and our mission even larger because of a positive message. And you don't see that often.
And, so. And I think you're giving us another call to action for ourselves too. We have to be bold in this go forward approach as well. And we have partners in the artist community that will go forward in a bolder way. And I think, speaking of good press, tonight on PBS NewsHour, you guys are have a 20, you have a long feature on the national broadcast of public, on the NewsHour tonight.
Yes, yeah, so, and it's very heavy music education.
Set your DVRs.
Yeah,
right?
Lawrence McDonald did it. Yeah, does. It's going to be, I know it's a good interview.
So we'll be watching for that, and we'll actually, and we're very excited to have a deeper conversation with Black Violin for our collaboration going forward. I think to go forward with a bold message about who should be in the music class, yeah. Who should have the opportunity for music education, and that being part of your mission as well.
Definitely, and part of our mission too, you know, on a deeper level, you know, because again, we play for so many kids, and most of the kids we play for aren't musicians or aren't in a music program, unfortunately. I'd say probably maybe somewhere between 20-25% of the students we play for are actually in a music class, because we ask them at the end, hey, did anyone play any music? And, you know, about a quarter of the audience will raise their hand. So for us, it's not just about music. I think that would be kind of a limiting view to look at it, where it's just about putting a violin in everyone's hand or putting a trumpet. You know, for us, it's about, we feel like we have a broader message. Our message is, look at the violin and look what we did with it. The reason why we did that is because we looked at it from a different perspective. How can you do something that we didn't think was possible? You know, if you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, you know, you want to be the next LeBron James, whatever, just shoot the jumper a different way. Find some other way to look at it. And for us, it's not. So it's like, you know, you can still push music, and violin obviously has been amazing for us, Mr. Miles. You know, I mean, you know, we love him forever for what he's done for us. But not everyone has a Mr. Miles, and not everyone has a great violin program or a great music program. But every kid can be a forward thinker. Every kid can look at things from different perspectives. So our mission, you know, on top of that, is to make sure that kids are understanding that, like, no matter what it is you're doing, just try to always think outside the box. And that's part of our bigger mission as well. Because, you know, that's what this world needs, is forward thinkers more than anything. You
know? So Will B. and James Miles, I wanted to give you a chance for a final thought. Will B., any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just to piggyback on what Kev just said, I mean, you know, ultimately, that's our vision. That's our goal statement. Just not just the kids. I think, you know, the kids are one thing, obviously, but, you know, there's a lot of adults that are just kind of still trying to find themselves. And, you know, we talk to the adults too, because we do a lot of matinees and late afternoon shows as well. So we, you know, we talk to everyone. We let them know, listen, just do that one thing that you can't stop talking about, that passion. It may not be your job, but it could be, I don't know, art and literature, whatever that thing is, just do it, you know, and just do it differently. So I think we all can be forward thinkers, and particularly the kids. I mean, what we're doing on stage every night is, the kids just look at it as like, man, this looks, I would never think this was possible, you know, and that's the key to it, you know. So we appreciate you guys having us on this panel, and great conversation.
It's been fantastic to hear the guys. This last part here, they've really kind of delved into philosophy a little bit. And a shout out to all those great music teachers out there for knowing and understanding that every child, everyone has gifts. Everyone has something that's special about them. And the belief that you don't have talent or you're not musically gifted, it's a bunch of hogwash. Everyone, if they are willing to work, can learn to play. And everyone, if they're willing to work hard enough, can have accomplishments. And it doesn't matter who you are or where you're at. And it brings me back to that little Pollyanna moment when Carl Malden is on his knees reading out of the locket that says, those who look for the bad in man will surely find it. And all I can think is, can't we do the opposite? Can't we look for the good in everyone? Can't we find something special about every child? And that's what I hope that music educators, and that I think that's the message that Kevin and Wilner are trying to bring, is that let's find something good about every one of us and everything that we do.
Yes, he was a very good teacher.
Yes, he was.
You were very lucky to have James Miles as a teacher, and we'll be, we wish you very good luck in the next 24, 36, 48 hours, however long it's going to be to welcome that precious being into the world, most important.
Thank you.
Now, Kev, don't go away. He's going to stay up and play us, but we have a little moment here we have to take advantage of, because this moment doesn't come in our lives this often to have this official celebration. I want to invite to the stage Michael Butera, who's Executive Director of the National Association for Music Education, and Joel Amond, who's the President and CEO of NAMM, because we do have a bit of an official moment that we have to acknowledge. It was just last week that the President signed the reauthorization of the Federal Education Act. It was only just last week, Thursday. And didn't the Senate just pass it like the 2 days before, less than a week ago? Now, if you've been paying attention, and many of you have, how many of you have been on a NAMM or an AFME fly-in? Many, many, many of you here. This is terrific that all of you, this goes out to all of you, and we are all part of this. This has been a long, long journey for us to get a federal reauthorization that so strongly states the role of music and arts education in a well-rounded curriculum. This is a pretty big deal. So we're here for this moment to actually acknowledge what a big deal it is. It's a pretty big deal. It's a really, it's a very big deal. And yes, we're getting a standing ovation here in the room. And you know what? You all really deserve the standing ovation. It's really, really a big deal. Thank you. And a big ovation to all of you who have been part of this and have been part of the advocate's journey to learn about it, to stay the course, to never give up. And I'm also here to tell you, as your kind of your one of the advocate nudges, there will always be nudging you about advocacy, is that we still have a lot of work to do. But and the work, a new kind of work starts today, and that we'll be all very involved in. But we have to take this moment to say we have created a new opportunity for ourselves, for our kids that we care about, for music education. And I know who can say it much better than me. Michael Butera has been a wonderful partner in all this. We've been united with the National Association for Music Education in all of these steps, but most importantly in the final steps. And it's been very important. So what does this moment mean for NAFME and for you? And so we could take a moment to just...
We could take a moment.
We could take
this.
A moment.
Okay.
To stop working for a little bit and then reflect on this. So.
Well, first, on behalf of NAFME, our board of directors and our national president board chair, Glenn Nierman, who's here with us today, we want to express to you and Joe and our good friend Leo back in Washington, D.C.,
Nelson
for
Mullins.
Our friends who don't know him, our organizational and personal thanks for making the new law possible. It's a great opportunity for all of us, but what we have to remember is that's what it is. It's an opportunity. It's not the end, it's a beginning. So our next steps are going to be just as tough as what we've been through. We're going to need to go to the business of writing federal regulations, state-by-state regulations, and those will whittle down to individual school districts. So if we really believe, you know, like we do at NAFME, that this is all about promoting the understanding and making of music so that next generations are able to create, perform, and respond, then what we need to do next, one, is we have to keep up our advocacy work. You know, we have a good friend and colleague who's sometimes here who used to say to us, advocacy is a wellness program. It's not an emergency room visit. And so we don't
any sense any.
Yes,
on the board of Midwest.
So we don't want to get into the idea of doing so much celebrating, which is a good thing to do, that we don't go on to the
why
next
why do you look
steps.
At me at that point? Is
so
a drummer for, thing?
You know, I have so many jokes about drummers I can't get started, you know.
Yeah.
But one is we enjoy ourselves today. Two, we start on this work of making sure that the regulatory process makes the promise and the opportunity of the new law real piece for us to all deal with. So that students like the ones we've seen here who've come and made a career in music are able to do that. Or B, all those people who play or sing or perform in some way during their school years who will not become professional musicians, but will be our supporters for a lifetime. We need to turn them into advocates. So regulation, turn our friends into advocates, and never stop making the case for music education. We can do this together, one community at a time. I'm confident we can do that. And again, our thanks to you, to Joe, to our good friend Leo. And I would be remiss if I didn't do a personal thank you to the person on our shop who carried most of this work. His name's Chris Woodside. I know many of you know him. Chris is the one who put the team together that made all of this possible. So a shout out to Chris would be very nice, folks.
Chris, was, bravo, Chris. Wish you were here. Yeah, pretty much Chris and Leo and I were united as a triumvirate many hours of every day. So it was wonderful to work with him.
I was only interested in the after hours.
Right. Joe, how about from, you've been up on the Hill many years, even before I was at NAMM, and you were shopping this idea, and you were really leading the charge. Did you think this we would see this day?
Well, I think, you know, what I think it has done, and again, it is a process, and we've got many miles to go, but what I think, what Mary and Claire and Eric and the team at NAMM, what they've taught us is that NAMM members, our board, our XCOM, and all the people that have come to Washington, we discovered our voice, and we discovered what it meant to go to our nation's capital and express our views and tell them what was important to us, and then to actually see it have impact and become written into law, the word music written into a law. We discovered our voice, and I think that's just the start of it. And we now know how powerful that can be at the state level, at the local level. And I think that's the number one thing it taught us. All the NAMM members here who went up on the Hill, who had never done it before, took those first steps of going, oh my God, how does this work? Shaking as they went up to the Hill, not knowing how to speak, not knowing how to get into an office or set an appointment. They now walk around that place like they own it. And actually they do, but that's not important. But the reality is we now have this network, this army of advocates who have been trained to have their voice be heard. And to your point about the relentless advocacy, you know, I'll share one story. And when everybody comes back from lobbying trips with stories, right? This is all about people and it's about stories. Our elected officials are humans, and the staff who really run the place all generally have some sort of music background, or they'll tell us stories when we come in. And I think one of the things that I remember the most was, in their awkward moments, I was with Secretary Riley, and he is one of our key coaches to this whole thing, Richard Riley. And we were backed up at appointments. And the one thing you know when you're lobbying, you cannot be late for an appointment, because if you miss it, they'll just move on to the next person who might be the pharmaceutical giant that comes in next. So Dick Riley and I were in one Senate building, and we had an appointment with Senator Kennedy. And we were late. And he said, you go ahead, don't worry, you'll never get into Kennedy's office on time, but just be there and hold our spot. So I run over, and waiting for Dick Riley, I'm instantly escorted into Ted Kennedy's office. Ruh-roh, Scooby! And here I am sitting with the lion of the Senate. And what are you here for? Music education. And I'm starting to get nervous about how am I going to fill this time before Dick Riley, who's our closer, could come in. I didn't have to. For the next 10 minutes, Senator Kennedy told me everything about the statistics. Well, you know, kids in school do better in math than science. Did you know that kids in music do this? And I just sat there, yeah, I heard that, And the whole litany, he had understood the advocacy message that had just been, again, relentlessly pounded over years and years and years. So, and we find that too, the message has sunk in. Now we turn it to action. We've turned it to action at the federal level. Now we turn it to action at the state level. And all I know is, again, drummer, all I know is that next fall, I believe there'll be millions of kids who have access to music education that didn't have it before because of this work. And that's to the credit of everyone here, everyone on the call, and everyone in the industry and the educators who have helped make this happen. And if that doesn't light your fire, as our chairman Markoff would say, your wood's all wet.
That's right. Thank you. Let's give another big end of year chart. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. What a wonderful time together here at the Midwest Clinic. One thing we didn't get to is that Kev and Will came to the Midwest Clinic with their teacher in an orchestra in their senior year. So this is a kind of a homecoming for them. So, but to wrap up our call, and we're definitely going to end with some music from Black Violins. Be sure that you, if you're interested, and we hope you all are, know of a great music education program that should be recognized nationally. Our Best Communities for Music Education program is open through January 30th, and we really encourage you to work with a school or school district to apply to be a Best Communities. We know that the schools that receive that designation have a really great advocacy message in which they can promote their programs, so we hope you're involved with that. About 1 month from now, we hope you will all be at the NAMM show, either as a music educator, as part of Music Education Days. Not to be missed, our first, you think this was exciting, we're going to have the first ever grand rally for music education, which will be Saturday morning. It'll kick off our music education celebration with the Canadian Brass and Weird Al Yankovic. And there is a movement afoot to get those two entities to perform together. So we're actually working on that right now. But Weird Al Yankovic has a remarkable music education story that he's going to be sharing with us. And I'm sure that I'm going to have to brush up on my parody so I can talk to him with some intelligence. Also, be sure that you subscribe to our podcast, Talking at Music Education. It's a great way to get we talk about advocacy pretty much for the whole 30 minutes or the stories about music education. And we all know that this is the season of gratitude. It's a great time to thank a music teacher, to thank someone who's inspired you in the field of music. I have a special thanks to my remarkable public affairs team, Eric, Claire, Luis, Jessica, Sharon, thank you. I don't know what I would do without you. Thank you. So, be sure that you join us on Facebook, you join us on Twitter, you see us at thenamfoundation.org, you're with us at the NAMM show, you can still register as a music educator or a college music student to be with us. If you see with us today, we'll find a way for you to be there. We'd love to have you there for the grand rally and all the remarkable things that the NAMM show can inspire you to do in education. So, Kev and Will and Black Violins, will you serenade us out to this holiday season? Sure. What are you going to play for us?
This one's called Virtuoso. I don't know if it's a serenade, but it's more like a party. So if you guys want to get out your seats and mingle and have a good time with us, you know, this is Virtuoso. Enjoy.
Thank you so much for joining me on this edition of Talking Up Music Education. Please stay current with news and updates from the NAMP Foundation at nampfoundation.org and join us via live web stream for the Grand Rally for Music Education from the NAMP show on Saturday, January 23rd, featuring the Canadian Brass and a conversation with Weird Al Yankovic. Happy New Year, and thanks for all of your ongoing efforts to keep music education strong.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMP Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMP Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMP Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary LNAMM.